Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is State Senator Dave Valesky. For another couple weeks, at least, Senator Valesky represents the 53rd Senate District, composed of Madison County and parts of Oneida and Onondaga counties, including the majority of the city of Syracuse. He was defeated in a primary last September by incoming Senator Rachel May. Senator Valesky, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Grant. Nice to be here.
It's good to have you here. And I'm going to start, actually, I want to tell you a little story, a little factoid about the program that, I don't think you know. And that is that you've been a frequent guest on the program, but you also were supposed to be the very first guest. But you ended up being the second guest.
Really? Well, who beat me
out? So this is the thing that happened. You'll appreciate this story. So we were all set to go. And then Elliot Spitzer, former governor, fairly recently after all of the scandals, but when he was just beginning to come back and do public things, came up here to give a talk about the financial crisis. And so that opportunity presented itself. So this is the thing I just want to say. You'll appreciate this. So doing this for the very first time, I'm going to be doing Elliot Spitzer. And if you remember, we used to ask these three questions at the end.
I do.
What's the chapter of life you're currently living? What's your worst political trait? What's your professional achievement that surprised you the most? And I'm thinking, for the very first time, I have to go ask Elliot Spitzer this now
at this point.
But he was very game about it.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, he was a very good sport.
So. Well, if I wasn't first on the show, I guess if I was bumped for a former governor, I guess that's okay.
You were first in our hearts.
Okay, there we go.
But let me start by asking you to talk about the primary election. And, you know, and I know it's in the rearview mirror, but still, I am very curious to get your thoughts about that. So why do you think you lost the primary? Because you were an incumbent. You had won many elections. It seemed like you were pretty solid in that district. So what happened?
Yeah, I think there was a bit of a shock factor to that, to how that all turned out among a lot of people. I think the reality is the issue in a Democratic primary, the narrative of the Independent Democratic Conference, which you and I have talked about ad nauseum on this program, and I continue to defend its successes and its accomplishments. But the reality, I think, and I don't think you can look at my primary loss independent from the other members of the former Independent Democratic
Conference. There were a whole bunch, six of the eight
of us, in fact, actually lost our primaries. So the narrative, Grant, had been set for a while that somehow we were not good Democrats, that we were empowering Republicans in some way, shape, or form. And despite all of the arguments that I and other colleagues of mine in their own races put out there in terms of defending what we did and why it was actually good for the state, and I continue to believe it was, and I continue to believe it was good for my constituents, and talked about certainly accomplishments and achievements. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, and as you know, as a political scientist, political primaries are often those who come out to vote in primaries are often on the ideological extreme, if we can say that. And certainly my brand of politics is a more moderate brand of politics. So when you look at the sum total of that election, I think those are the reasons, really the primary reasons why what happened actually happened. But you're right. There was certainly a surprise factor, I think, among a lot of my constituents who also were surprised with the result.
I wonder, too, whether or not somehow the IDC got caught up in the anti-Trump backlash. I mean, had there not been, and it's sort of, you know, a huge if, but had Trump, in a sense, not had such a presence in this midterm that perhaps you might not have lost, it seemed like the IDC somehow was associated with Trump in a strange way.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think what happened in the primary was very similar to what happened in the general election. So in the primary, you saw many Democratic senators who were affiliated with the Independent Democratic Conference be defeated, as I was. In the general election, you saw many Republican senators who were defeated by Democrats. So I think in both elections, I think our politics this entire cycle has been dominated by the presence of Donald Trump in one way, shape, or form. National politics have certainly more than in my memory.
Me too.
Influenced local elections. And I think you're absolutely right.
So having said all that, with the benefit of hindsight, anything you would have done differently in that primary if you could do it over again?
That's, you know, I've spent some time thinking about that very question. And I'm actually happy to say that there's not anything that I would have done differently. I ran the kind of campaign that I thought was important to run. I certainly spent, I think, more than enough money to have been successful in terms of campaign messaging and that sort of thing. I really think that the narrative, the die in effect had already been cast, and despite my best efforts, and I can say many times it was personally frustrating for me to feel that I was not able to perhaps articulate what exactly the Independent Democratic Conference really meant, what it really did, what it really did not do. And so that was and because so much of that, Grant, is inside baseball, if you will, to the average voter. I guess if there's a regret, had I found a better way to be able to communicate that, okay, maybe that would have been something that I would have tried to have done differently. But in terms of the campaign itself, I ran the kind of campaign, a positive campaign. I certainly want every campaign I've written, I've run over 14 years has been positive, issue-based, I'm pleased that we ran that kind of campaign, and obviously unfortunate that it didn't work out.
And then there was some discussion that you might run in the general election because your name was still on the ballot on another party line, and some folks I think were speculating about that and encouraging you to do that. How did you go about deciding not to actively run?
That was an interesting process for several days. Actually, I myself had not given it a whole lot of thought. I had really sort of overwhelming amount of input from the general public of people asking me to continue to stay in the race, urging me to do so. So I thought from my perspective, while I am, as you know, I have been a Democrat and whether I liked it or not, lost fair and square a Democratic primary, there were those who, and I appreciated certainly that sentiment, from the perspective of the job that I was able to do over 14 years. But really, at the end of that day, again, I am who I am, and I was a Democrat and certainly maintained that stayed true to Democratic core principles. And I will say that, you know, whatever election reform package that the new legislature I anticipate will take up, I think they ought to look at that issue of having multiple party lines and if a candidate should lose a primary in a major party line, perhaps making it a little easier to take your name off the general election ballot. It's very difficult to do that right now, short of moving out of state or death.
Neither or running for another office.
Right. And none of which were an option for me at that time. So that's kind of how that all ended up.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with State Senator Dave Valesky. You're listening to the Campbell Conversations. So what do you think, looking back on your career, what do you think your legacy is for the 53rd District?
I think that when people reflect on my time in office, I hope they see that I was willing to think outside of the box and shake up the status quo, which clearly what the Independent Democratic Conference was, to find a way to get things done, to accomplish real results for the people of the state. When I was first elected in 2004 and for the first few years, and particularly in 2009 and 2010, late state budgets, culture of corruption type of, as the media would call it, cases that would come along far too frequently, and a legislature that really became known as the most dysfunctional legislature in the nation. And some of the things that I and others were able to do from a legislative perspective to kind of break gridlock, to do budgets on time, to do fiscally responsible budgets, make good policy choices and policy decisions. I hope that as people reflect back, we'll remember that. And also the fact that for us, for me in my office, constituent service, the daily type of issues that you and I will never talk about on a radio program because they may only matter to one person, one person who, for whatever reason, is in a tough place and can't afford the heat in their home or in their apartment and needs some help working with National Grid in some way, shape, or form, or an issue that is personal to just one person. I've always sort of called that the bread and butter of a legislative office, and being of help and helping people and finding ways to make life better for people. Those are the kinds of things that we spend a lot of time doing and a lot of our effort, and I'm very proud of those results.
Is there one single accomplishment that you would regard as the most important one that is very specific? You could say, okay, this. I get what you're saying about working to make the process better and the constituency service, but I'm wondering if there's one thing if you had to pull it out.
I would probably say that from a legislative perspective, and I went back and took a look as I'm sort of recapping my own career and was kind of surprised to realize that when this is all said and done, I will have authored over 130 laws in the state, and which is that's a pretty significant number. And as the years went on, two of those, in direct answer to your question, two of those laws I think have been transformative from an update from an upstate economic development perspective, and also a revitalization of our inner cities. One, the Historic Rehabilitation Tax Credit Program, which I was the Senate champion of and author of. Those tax credits have been used for a whole host of projects. The highest profile here in Syracuse, of course, the Hotel Syracuse, but so much more of downtown redevelopment, bringing back our old historical buildings and putting them into multi-purpose use has been directly related to that Historic Rehabilitation Tax Credit Program. And the other is very similar, and that is the fact that we established in statute a number of years ago now the Land Bank Program. And the Land Bank here in Syracuse and Onondaga County, the most successful really across the state in addressing the issue of what do we do with blighted properties in our urban neighborhoods. And so I'm particularly pleased with my work in those areas, and it probably would be, from a legislative perspective, probably the highlight of my career.
What about the biggest frustration that you had?
The biggest frustration, I guess, would be not dissimilar to sort of any office that someone would serve, is that no matter how much you do, it's never enough. There's always something else that did not get done, whether it's a piece of legislation that didn't get passed before we ended the legislative session in June, whether it's a budget initiative that I was working on to try to be supportive of and the dollars just weren't there, or a school district that needed help with something and didn't quite get that project over the finish line. So there's the narrative that there's always something more to be done can be frustrating.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with State Senator Dave Valesky, who is the outgoing senator representing New York's 53rd Senate District. So your successor, Rachel May, political office is new to her. Is there any one nugget of advice or wisdom that you have given her, or that you would give to her about what she needs to be aware of in Albany?
Well, a couple of things. One I think most important that I would share with her and to anyone who's first entering office, you have a lot of people coming at you from a lot of different directions. The most important thing, I think, to be able to do is to be able to listen and listen effectively. People often expect their elected officials to be the ones who are doing the talking all the time. But I find that being a good listener is probably the single most important quality that a legislator can have in terms of being an effective legislator. So I would, from a personal perspective, I would certainly share that. As far as Albany itself and how Albany works, and advice in terms of how Albany works, the reality, the geographic reality that we have in upstate New York, in New York State as a whole, the upstate, downstate divisions and tensions, those are real. They are real. We hear about them. We talk about them. But in almost each and every policy choice or budget priority or decision that we were involved in as a legislature, there are always those tensions. And, you know, the famous line about all politics being local, it is certainly important to focus on big issues, big statewide issues, big changes in policy. That's critically important. But never lose sight of local issues and local politics. And some of them can be very specific to one geographic area. One of the things that I spent a lot of time with the Madison County Board of Supervisors over the last couple of years was working on a fair share funding formula that became necessary after the compact, after the legislature ratified in 2013 or 14 it was, when we ratified the compact that was negotiated between the Oneida Indian Nation, Madison and Oneida counties, and Governor Cuomo to bring an end to the land claim process and all of that. Other issues continue to come up, and those issues were very important to Madison County taxpayers. In Syracuse and in the Onondaga County towns, not so much, not really a big deal. So that piece of advice, again, to Senator-elect May and Senator-elect Antonacci as well. We have two new senators here in Central New York, and that's certainly significant. He is an elected official already, unlike her. But again, the ability to, even though you work on very large and large in scope policy issues, never take your eye off the local needs.
You mentioned the upstate, downstate, and I did want to ask you a question about that because it does seem to me anyway that the leadership at the state level now, the center of political weight, is decidedly downstate. I mean, it already was slanted that way, but now it's decidedly downstate. So do you see challenges for upstate in getting a voice and meaningful representation in that process? Because one of the things is none of the parties in control right now, in a sense, quote unquote, really need upstate anymore to maintain their situation.
Well, I think that challenge is always there, regardless of who has controlled and now will control the state Senate. It may take on a different sense of urgency. But I think where I feel optimistic looking ahead to the new year and the new legislature is what happened in history and the ability to learn lessons from history. So the last time the Democrats were in charge of the state Senate in 2009-2010, not a particularly good time for upstate New York. We'll put it that way. So those lessons are still, and there are still many senators who will be part of the new majority, who were part of that majority, including Senator Stuart Cousins herself, who is the incoming majority leader. She is a suburban legislator. She is downstate, but she represents Westchester County. I think she understands the full breadth and scope of the entire state and knows the responsibility that she has to be not only a senator in her Senate district, but now as the incoming majority leader, in a sense, a representative of the entire state of New York. So I am optimistic that with her as the new leader, and again, sort of learning the lessons from the past, that we'll have a positive way forward. The other thing that I would just add, significant difference this time around versus now almost 10 years ago, the person who's governor at the time makes a significant difference as well. So Governor Cuomo, I think, deserves a lot of credit for focusing as much attention as he has on the needs of upstate New York. And in some cases, my sense is that he will do that to an even greater degree as a result of the change in the power structure in the state Senate.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guest is State Senator Dave Valesky. So there's a potentially very ambitious legislative agenda for Albany this year. I wanted to sort of put you in the role of analyst now looking forward. But it seems to me that it's quite likely that there will be, you already mentioned this, I think some significant reforms of the political process and the way the legislature works, ethics, transparency, campaign finance, election law. It seems clearly possible, if not likely, that there will be recreational marijuana, codification of Roe versus Wade. The big one, it seems to me, we've talked about it before on this program, we talked about it when you were debating your opponent in the primary, is this New York Health Act. It seems to me that that is going to create some political roadblocks and some political challenges for this group of senators who were elected on a pledge that they were really going to push this through, that it wasn't just going to be something they were going to support, they were really going to push for it, and the governor who has already backed away from this. It's a huge change to the system. How do you see that playing out this year?
Well, that's a great question, and you raise a great point. And I think this issue, perhaps more than anything else, shows what can happen and where a disconnect can happen between politics and governing. So in the political season, when we're all running for election or re-election, we talk about issues that are important, that sound good. Many issues sound good. When you talk about health care, we all should have health care. We should be able to afford our health care. The single-payer notion on paper. But then it comes time to govern. The elections end, and then it comes time to govern. And something as dramatically sweeping as a New York Health Act is extremely difficult to negotiate and to implement. In fact, I believe the Assembly and Senate sponsors of the bill, at least one, if not both, have already indicated the new legislature hasn't even been seated yet. Has already indicated that we may have to modify the proposal a bit.
I think it's going to end up getting studied for
maybe studied for
years,
a little while. And, and this one in particular, Grant, is so difficult. I have always said, even though I was a co-sponsor of that bill, always maintained that the question of health care is best addressed at the federal level. Mm-hmm. It just is. And I think what has happened in part with the New York Health Act is an incredible frustration with the national government, which I can understand. But to assume that states, and this state in particular, can solve every issue where there has been, in many people's opinions, lack of sufficient attention at the federal level, it doesn't always work out that way. And I think that's part of what has been going on with the Single-Payer Health Act. And the New York Health Act has been around for years, so it's not that it's new. The concept is not new. In fact, the Assembly, I think, has passed it a number of times.
And this has been sort of something that Richard Gottfried, I think, has been pushing for a couple decades.
That's right. Yeah. And Richard Gottfried is the chair of the Assembly Health Committee. So they have passed that bill for years. The Senate has never taken it up for a floor vote. So it's been around for a long time.
Now it's real.
It is, and so you've got the issue of national action or inaction. It became a very, very effective campaign issue. Clearly, in my race, it was a high profile issue, and most races around the state, my understanding, it was as well. Now the elections are over. And now it's time to figure out how to do something and actually implement that. So I think it will take a little longer than many might have originally anticipated.
Well, I want to squeeze a couple other questions in, but I'll just make sort of an editorial comment back. I think there's a couple big problems here. One is the state border issue, for one thing.
Right.
Second thing are things like the ERISA problem, which is in the weeds, but it's a real thing in terms of the ability of a state to change what a self-insurer does because of federal law. But the big one is, how do you convince the population of New York to turn over that big of a chunk of economy to the state?
That's right.
Given
that's
some of their experiences.
Exactly right.
But anyway, back to you. any specific plans for the future that you can share now, or still working that out?
I am still working that out, but I am hoping to continue to serve in some public capacity. Public service for me, I've spent my entire career first for Assemblyman Bragman in the State Assembly, then at public television and radio, WCNY, certainly the public interest, and then the last 14 years in the State Senate. So I enjoy public service. I find a great deal of personal satisfaction out of working in the public space, and I'm working toward continuing to work in that space.
Now, outside of your own election in the primary, I was curious to know whether there were other election results, either at the congressional level or the state level, from the midterms or dynamics in them that surprised you or otherwise caught your eye. I mean, we've already talked about how we were both kind of struck by how much national issues and President Trump factored into all these local things. But any other results here locally or in the region that really caught your eye?
Well, I followed with great interest and attention to the congressional race in the district that includes Madison County, in large part because Assemblyman Brindisi, soon to be former Assemblyman Brindisi, Congressman-elect Brindisi, is someone who I've worked with very closely in the state legislature and think incredibly highly of him and thought throughout that campaign, and certainly think now that he'll do a tremendous job for me as my congressman, as someone who happens to live in Madison County. So I was I was focused.
Were you surprised that he won?
No, I wasn't surprised. That obviously was as polarizing a race as we had here locally and beyond, really. But he worked really hard. It shows, though, how difficult it is. That race, he had announced, if my memory is correct, he had announced that he was going to run for Congress a full 18 months before that election. And
was able to raise money.
To do it and continuing to serve as an assembly member. So that one in particular, I had a lot of interest in following.
Any thoughts about the 24th congressional district race? Did that come out just about what you would have expected?
It did. Yeah. It did. I'm not surprised that Congressman Katko was successful. Mm-hmm. I'm also not surprised that his margin of victory was much closer than his previous runs at office. And I think the reason there is exactly what we were talking about earlier in the program, certainly the effect of national politics. That obviously is a federal office, so you would anticipate a Trump effect to be more influential in a federal race than some of these other races. But it came out about where I would have thought it would have.
We've only got about another minute, but I wanted to squeeze this question. Is there a book that you've been putting off reading or something that you've been putting off doing that, you know, you're looking forward now to have a little bit more time to get into? I mean, I've got, for example, Infinite Jest is sitting on my nightstand. It's been haunting me for a year. So I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
Well, I have the book that sits on my coffee table that I am anxious to pick up and get going is John Meacham's Soul of America.
Oh, right.
I've heard a lot about it. I know a lot of people who have read it, and I'm very anxious to read that.
The other thing,
a little time to do it.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, and just a couple seconds left, you're still going to come back on the program as an expert, right?
I would love to do that.
Okay. That was State Senator Dave Valesky. And, Senator, I just want to say, without any disrespect to the person who's going to fill your seat after you, you know, I think the district is going to miss you. And I want to thank you for your service. I think the one thing you have in common, well, not the one thing, but one thing that you do have in common with her is you're both really decent people, and I think that's important to the process.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.